I got the thumbs up, Johnny Lupinacci. You know, from who? Jacob, chairman of the board's Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk. Educated educators talking education. And yeah, you know, mixed up the intro there a little bit, putting Jacob first and foremost because, hey, this is probably one of our favorite days of the week. We get to record. Johnny, we get to be guests on our own show for Jacob, Chairman of the Board, Producer's Choice episode. Whew. I don't know. I got to admit, though, coming into this one, I ain't nervous.
Really?
Well, hey, that's good. I was just, talking to some friends who listen, and they said, you know, maybe one of these Fridays, Tim will realize Jacob's really not out to get you guys. In fact, he kind of makes you guys all seem a little bit more, you know, like real, a little bit more like everybody else. And I said, I know, man, but Tim has the anxiety, and, you know, anxiety isn't always rational. And so I am so glad to hear that.
I am just excited. And Jacob, man, I tell you, you know, last night, no producer's choice, Jacob nightmares. I didn't have you, you know, chasing me down with, Tim, you got to answer this question.
Well, so. Good news, Tim. Today is all gotcha questions. We're doing just, I've got 10 things here written down. I think they're really going to snag you. And without further ado, let's do the thing.
For choo-choo producer, Jacob's choice, chairman of the board. Ow!
You now have two choices.
Chairman of the board, Jacob.
Ow! Jacob, chairman of the board.
I bet the board is spelled B-O-R-E-D.
We choose to go to the moon.
Life's full of tough choices, isn't it?
You chose poorly.
Fellas, Tim, Johnny, we all remember going to school. It was a great time, wasn't it? Math, science, literature. We learned a lot from our experiences in the American education system. But there's one thing that our teachers and our principals never intended to teach us, but which I believe helped shape American culture just as much as any syllabus ever could. And that, folks, is the spirit of rebellion. Cue the clip.
Dear Mr. Vernon, we accept the fact that we had to sacrifice a whole Saturday in detention for whatever it was we did wrong. But we think you're crazy to make us write an essay telling you who we think we are. And you see us as you want to see us. In the simplest terms, with the most convenient definitions. But what we found out is that each one of us is a brain.
And an athlete.
And a basket case. A princess.
And a criminal.
Does that answer your question? Sincerely yours. Breakfast Club.
Today I've got a brain and a princess here. I'll let you guys decide who's who. I want to talk about those little acts of rebellion that young folks have been quietly, or sometimes not so quietly, engaging in for as long as we've had schools in this country. To help me with that, I've asked two experts in disobedience to join us here on the program today. Doctors Johnny Lupinacci and Tim Slecker. Fellas, thank you for being here.
Nice. Thank you, Jacob. I might now be getting a little bit. You might be asking me to reveal some things.
No way. Well, that's maybe the third question. Anyway, in short, folks, we're here to talk about people and when they say,
I won't do what you tell me.
Okay.
I think against the machine.
It's going to be a lot of fun, Johnny, because I know you guys like to rage against the machine just like I do. So I'm going to start this off with a really simple question. And I'll start with you, Tim, because you lost some of that fear, and I'm going to try to put it back into you. Can you tell us about a time back when you were a student that you rebelled against the man?
The man, Jacob. I'm going to think about that for a second and give this a pass to Johnny. I need you to jump in, Johnny.
Tim's bad at math. He doesn't understand statutes of limitation. And he has the math phobia, math beard. So he'll kick it my way. Jacob, I've got some great examples of this that keep it light, as rebellion should, because you were talking about, you know, where we kind of, especially I'll take the teacher perspective. Of course, as a student, you always have a little bit more knowledge of kind of where and what's happening and why it's happening. But as a teacher and, you know, working with principals and things, there are certain little acts of rebellion that, yeah, we say, hey, you can't do that. And we have to be, you know, in a disciplinary role. But deep down, we're like, this is good. Kids are being kids. And one of my favorite examples of that, Jacob, and I think it's a cultural trend around most of the country, are senior pranks.
Oh, yeah.
These are fantastic, like creative senior pranks, not the like malicious ones, right? That sort of goes a little bit too far. And like we raise our eyebrows, we're like, what's wrong with these kids? Because there's sort of a boundaries and they always gets pushed. And I think one of my favorites ever was a group of students who took apart a car, brought it in this school and put the car together, you know? And this is why I say, like, to them, they snuck in and put a car together. And I might be revealing too many of like the secrets on the other end of it, but as teachers, administrators, and especially as like custodial staff, like, yeah, we all talk, and this was not that long ago, so we were group texting and sharing footage of the security cameras kind of watching these kids pull off this operation as though it was special ops, right? But the whole thing is seen, and we're like, okay, they haven't really done anything really wrong. And in fact, one of the administrators was in on it, and so were some of the custodial staff. So they didn't even like break in, right? But they wanted to be like, hey, this is a big prank and it's against the rules and it's at night. And if you're out there listening, you probably had senior pranks at your school. Maybe it was a mad bowler, someone who rolls a bowling ball down a hallway while you're in class. And you ever remember the noise? Did you have a mad bowler at your school, Tim?
No, we didn't have the bowler, but
And then it makes a huge noise.
I bet.
And then it gets to the end of the hallway. And you know what's the end of most old school hallways?
Stairs. Steps. It's like,
Yeah, so you'd be listening to the mad bowler occasionally. You know, just those kinds of fun-loving pranks, Jacob, that push at boundaries, and kids are being kids. And I think you said, like, if there's one thing we all did learn a little bit about in school, although it's not directly in the lesson plan, except maybe in some history classes, you know, that teenage angst and rebellion.
Oh, I love that one. Okay. So me, myself, Jacob, the man, West Mifflin North was the neighbor high school to Steel Valley. Steel Valley, we were the Iron Men, and West Mifflin North were the Vikings.
Hmm.
And in the front courtyard facing the road, as you looked up to West Mifflin North High School, their shop classes had assembled a Viking out of miscellaneous pieces of metal. It's about 10 feet tall Viking. And every year, the night before that game, that Viking would, in the morning, have some new apparel attached to it, as Johnny points out, and going on the take out the Viking missions. Dark clothing, hats, makeup, crawling along the front lawn of West Mifflin North High School with toilet paper, you know, a really stupid hat. and then the next day, taking your family members for a ride past and go, look at the Viking. We got him. We got the Viking. I don't know. I was that bad to do that? Was that going against the man, or was that actually an activity, like you said, an extracurricular that
To me, that's an essential curricular, Tim.
I was going to say, right? You know, but you know, character building. Now I can hear somebody going, so you're advocating the destruction of property, Dr. Tim Slegger.
I guess I was too with the mad bowler. I mean, bowling balls can cause.
Well, let me just tell you our Iron Man also was very well dressed the next day after that game too, because, you know, tit for tat on that. The West Mifflin North kids also, you know, kind of made a mockery of our big Iron Man standing out front of our high school.
Is that the same company that sells paper from The Office?
My big question here, Tim, is
Thunder Mifflin.
Did you play like Black Sabbath Iron Man at your home games, or did you incorporate that at all? Because it seems like a very obvious choice.
As a matter of fact, that was the theme of our wrestling team. As we came in, we would darken the gymnasium, and the wrestlers, my team, we would come running out to boom, 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 no, 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 no. Yeah.
I love it. Man. Tim, that's the secret sauce. That's rebellion right there of a sort, I think, having that metal attitude to come out with Black Sabbath. Something you guys both kind of touched on here talking about youthful rebellion is kind of an important aspect, I think, to it, which is, one, after doing something rebellious, you make sure to drive by with the family so they can see it. Because part of it is you do want people to know, and you kind of want to get caught. And then another aspect of it is, just like you said, both schools are doing it. Everyone is aware. We could put a watch out, couldn't we? But nah, we'll let it happen. Johnny, they catch him on the camera. We'll let you in to put the car in here. What do you guys think about the aspect of young people rebelling and kind of people knowing and letting it happen because there's a certain amount of healthy rebellion?
Yeah, I think this is a tough question, Jacob, because it works in that gray area.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That every teacher out there, and I'd like to say probably every parent or coach too, kind of knows there's certain things that, you know, it's nuanced, it's situational, because there's times we could say, like, something problematic, like, oh, those are boys being boys, but actually they're sexually harassing people, right? And I don't want to make those kind of comments of like, hey, these are just teenagers being teenagers. But there is some, like you said, some validity to that, some natural important developmental step of like, hey, it's sort of like, you know, babies, you know, learn to crawl at a certain age, you know, teenagers rebel. I mean, and I know there's some stigma around that word, but every parent listening knows, even the best, you know, 14, 15, 13, however year you are in the teens, if you got one at home or in your family, you know, there's some days where they're just like them against everyone. And it's just something they're going through. And most of us grow out of it because we're not punished excessively for being in it. We all go through it. Even if you're listening, you're like, well, I didn't. Then you're an anomaly. You're caught on an outlier. And there's nothing wrong with that. Lucky you. Because it was a hormonal hot mess for most of us. So I think, like, you know, adolescent psychologists and people kind of help us as teachers and principals and in those kinds of disciplinary roles kind of sit in the gray area with, okay, what's too much? What are the boundaries? And in fact, it's actually really reassuring. Like, when we know that they're having those feelings, having those ideas, talking to others about it, in a community kind of space. I'm going to sound like an old guy for a minute. I worry about online these days because, you know, someone really far away from the school, not connected to the community, might, you know, say, well, that's a prank. You could actually do even more if you do X, Y, and Z. And, you know, it escalates and kind of festers, as Tim has pointed out before, in these, you know, capitalistic rabbit holes of clicking and upping the ante. But, you know, I think, every educator grapples with what's too much, when is too much, and how do you still, like I said before, it's like when your kid says something really funny, but it shouldn't be funny in that moment, and you have to like hold back the laughter. It's a similar thing as a teacher or a school leader when these pranks or these rebellions happen. We're like, of course, it's kind of cool that they're happening, but we also have to be like, hey, now you did this, there's a consequence, right? And it's not excessive, and I think it's a healthy part of development. You know, I will give you an example of one that happens almost in every school, at least it used to a lot. And I won't name the district because there's some confidentiality stuff around this. But there is a district that I know of. There's a big, giant high school. In fact, there's three high schools. Some people listening could probably figure this out because it's pretty rare. There's three massive high schools all sharing the same campus. And these kids, for decades, have organized a massive food fight and walkout.
Ooh.
That no principal has ever been able to squash. Now, at that last part, since 2013 was the last time I was really connected and close to this community. So if you're a sleuth, you can figure this out, because you can look at, you know, my resumes and all stuff and figure out where was I up till 2013. But nonetheless, these kids, man, they would organize, and this like team of administrators, you can imagine three of the biggest schools in the country all sharing the same school campus. So tons of kids. I mean, you're already outnumbered young people to adults in schools. They don't get violent about it. This isn't like, you know, like people beating each other up, or, you know, there is some, I would say, some destruction of property in the sense of like food is actually pretty important, and it's wasteful to throw food and make a mess like that. Someone has to clean it up, and it ends up being some of the kids, because, I mean, everybody starts with this big food fight, and then there's this massive walkout. And for like decades, kids knew. And no, this is the tricky part, Jacob, that I'm in the gray area on. It's kind of like a scary reminder. Nobody could figure out how to stop it. Like, this campus has cameras. And yes, people get in trouble, but no one really does anything overwhelmingly bad. Like, no one's lighting anything on fire. No one's breaking windows. No one's hurting anybody. But it's a little bit chaotic. And yes, it's a little scary when all of the students say, guess what we're not doing today? And they leave school. And so I've always been a big sort of, I can't say fan of it, but admirer. Admirer is a good word.
And
sympathizer for my administrator friends who would say, John, you have no idea what like a problem this is for us. It's massive. Like, we have whole teams trying to figure this out. We have like people infiltrated in the school just to try and stop this thing, and we haven't been able to.
We've embedded ourselves within the student body.
Oh, it's hilarious, man. It shouldn't be hilarious. It's one of those things where like you say to your administrator friend, like, oh man, I bet that's hard. That sucks. And then you go home and you're like, you know, crack a cold one, and you're like, it's actually kind of funny.
But that is funny. But Jacob, though, you know, adding at a point, like what Johnny was saying, the gray, right? And this is kind of that, okay, you know, for me to remember the way I remembered it, right? It almost sounds fun. It sounds like a nice reflection. But you know, what happens here, and I see this from the administrator's point of view too, is that somebody eventually antes up in these types of things, you know. And so, you know, one year that Viking got a bunch of oil paint all over it. So now you're dealing with destruction of property. They had to do that. And in fact, I mean, you know, it gets to the point where, you know, a couple kids, 1979, 1981, sitting around, you know, smoking cigarettes and other things, and going, you know what? My dad has a, you know, one of those welding torches downstairs. I bet we can take that Viking down and bring him with us. And so even that could sound potentially funny.
It's where, right? It goes too far, Tim.
But yeah, and you go too far, and you know, most of the time, like, you know, did you guys do it? And like, yeah, well, you know, his dad came down and saw us taking out the acetylene tank, you know. But yeah. So how do you celebrate those acts of rebellion that I would say are developmentally necessary, but yet then potentially also know how or when to say, you guys, you've gone too far. You know, what is that moment there? And as Johnny said, I think it's gray. I know there is a listener out there somewhere who's going,
well,
no,
you know what?
There's no grayness here.
Well, for some teachers, there isn't. Yeah. I mean, there's a reason why some teachers are teachers and they're really good at it. And I'm not dissing them. They're often excellent at classroom management and, you know, getting results in the form of like kids sitting in desks and being compliant. I had lots of them as a student. And I think I told Jacob and you in a previous show, like one thing we all experienced in school is we learned how to watch a clock, especially in those detentions I was in. So there's not, I'm not hating on those folks who struggle in the nuance, but I will throw a special shout out to every teacher, every parent, every grown folk person out there who navigates that gray area, because it really is important to grow and to have, like, we're kids for a reason, to make some mistakes. When we're left not learning from those mistakes, it can grow into a big problem. When we're repressed to where we can't even make a mistake, it's called a loss of childhood. And this has been extremely tough. I know I'm getting on a soapbox here, but it's been extremely tough to be a kid in this country, especially right now. Like, I mean it. Like, we've talked about it for decades. There's a loss of childhood. But there is really some, like, expectation that, you know, like, maybe kids won't misbehave. And I'm not saying, like, here saying, well, kids should be out doing malicious behaviors and, you know, bullying each other and hurtful and harmful things. But also, they're going to push boundaries. And if they're repressed in that, again, I'm not saying this is like, go ahead, let them do whatever. They need us to be in a position. How many times has any grown up out there learned, you know, sometimes active behavior, like a misbehavior, is a form of communication to just kind of test to see who cares, right? Because there's a difference between a teacher who doesn't say or do anything and a teacher or a school leader who says, okay, that's the line, you crossed it. I'll give you a great example, too. I was at a local football game. I love fall because first downs are Friday night lights, and it's that time of year. But it's at a local high school football game, you know, tons of kids. It's homecoming, whatever. Like, I love that stuff, like the convertible cars that drive the homecoming court around and everything. But there were tons of kids. And, you know, the administrators, they're all kind of, like, stationed out around. You remember the drill, Tim, as a teacher? Mm-hmm. If you're a chaperone or you're a volunteer there, you're maybe in the booster club or, you know, part of the coaching staff extended, and you just kind of are an adult monitoring to make sure, yeah, kids are going to get a little out of control, but you got your eyes on it. And they look at you, not like, what's he doing here? They look, a lot of them, and they're like, okay, cool, I'm safe. A grown-up is here in case things get kind of crazy. And there was a kid, and, you know, he was just like feeling himself, man. He was being goofy, you know, he's being a kid. Maybe being a little rowdy at times. His friends are kind of like, dude, chill out. Like, you know, he's getting into it. It's a football game. It's homecoming. And he's drinking a soda, and he takes the soda bottle and he turns like towards the trash can, which of course is like 20 yards away. And he just does a flip like of an empty soda bottle that makes it about a quarter of the way. But, you know, it's in the air. And immediately he looks right to that grown person who happens to be the assistant principal. He looks over and the principal is just like, you know, gives the look, you know, the stare. I can't show you because we're not on video, but you know the look, everybody out there, and just kind of points to it and mouths pick it up and points to the trash can. The kid kind of goes over and his friends are laughing and cheering, like pushing him over there, but he goes and picks it up, puts it in the trash can. That could have escalated to a huge problem, right? But the person in charge knew how to handle the gray area. Just needs the kid to settle down a little bit. He was a little impulsive, a little too excited. You know, it's an empty plastic soda bottle. Not going to hurt anybody. But if we start throwing bottles, people can get hurt, right? Also, like, we don't just throw trash. And also, there's some semblance to the order here, even though things are a little crazy. So loved seeing that kind of thing. But we have to give space for young people to be young people. Otherwise, there's this thing called, like, repressed angst. Yeah. Right. And all kinds of built up things that are just impulses that turn into angers. And I don't know, Tim, but I think we've had some less happier shows about where that anger manifests and comes out into our communities.
Absolutely.
I agree, guys.
Jacob.
Rebellion is cool, but sometimes it needs to be constrained for the good of everyone. We're running out of time, unfortunately, so I'm going to do something unprecedented. We're going to do a 120-second question and just use this last one and demand, okay? Demand out of you conciseness. You hear me? You two guess. I want 120 seconds max. Let's go. Guys, would the ideal system of education be one where students had no need to rebel? Or does the very act of rebellion in and of itself contribute something healthy to a person's development as a citizen in a democracy? Johnny, what do you think?
Really quickly, I think it's absolutely healthy for any human being to sort of push boundaries a little bit, and especially for adolescent, you know, people like children in our community to learn about boundaries and how to be in community by, you know, behaving outside of the norm of how we as adults behave so that they learn how to become adults like we are. So I wouldn't necessarily call it rebellion, but I think it's okay to kind of categorize it, maybe say rebellious as an adjective, because rebellion kind of sounds a little bit too like militarized to me. You know, I think, you know, words illuminate certain things and hide other things. And that particular word, it makes some people feel like, wow, they're going to overthrow the school or they're a coup d'etat, you know, and really most of the time, it's just a form of behavior communicating something. And it's important to all of our growth and to helping kids learn to be in our community. Now, on the flip side of that, it's equally as important to those kids rebelling that the grown-ups patiently hold firm but empathetic boundaries, like be empathetic, understand where it's coming from, but be firm. All actions have a consequence. Don't be over punishing, but definitely assign some disciplinary measures.
Whew, man. Jacob, did you time that?
Yes, that was 1:17. Johnny, do you want to do three more seconds, or do you feel good with your answer?
I'm good.
Okay.
I'm going to, you know, take that in and kind of move. You put this in you framed it at the end with democracy. And I got to say that I think some good teaching actually kind of situates students sometimes in situations to actually get them in a form where they can practice what it means to dissent, to potentially, you know, so maybe that's a better word than rebel, right? Is this idea of disagreement, dissension, to make one's case, to potentially, you know, understand. And if we're teaching patriotic citizenship, nothing more patriotic than dissent, peaceful dissent, and the ability to actually make that known, to point out that you have a grievance. And in fact, you know, encouraging that from the standpoint of even some types of learning situations in even upper elementary school, where students have an opportunity to, quote, enact some form of a civil disobedience protest around an issue potentially that's really important to them in their school. And so, heated climate, political climate right now, but I think that's a valuable type of situation that schools actually can help so that we don't get out of control. What does it mean to dissent peacefully, to be a patriotic citizen who understands and respects humanity and property, but still has an ability to rebel?
Wow. Tim, good answer. Dr. Tim Slecker, Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, thank you so much for coming on your own show. I really appreciate that. I always love having you here as guests on your own show. I could rebel and change the way we end the show, but I'm not going to do that, Tim.
Nice. Oh, man, I thought you were going to kick it to me, Jacob.
Well, Jacob, you know what that means. It is time for your moment of zen. History can untie our minds, our bodies, our disposition to move, to engage life rather than contemplating it as an outsider.
Let's go! Sorry about the rebellion.
I love it. Everybody rebel. But you know what would be an act of rebellion? Is if you tuned in and downloaded all the Busted Pencils podcasts. Don't forget, to catch us on Mondays for Homeroom. This was a rockin' producer's choice, but you got us all next week. Also, Wednesdays for Class in Session. And we'll be back again on next Friday for producer's choice. It's always there. Thank Jacob, chairman of the board, for those exciting episodes. And don't forget that every Saturday, you could tune in at 3 p.m. Central Time across all the Civic Media network stations for 1 hour of your favorite blue-collar scholars, Tim and Johnny, and keep busting pencils.